Morning, everyone. Okay, last week we were talking about the feast in reference to the tabernacle and the Christian. And we've been focusing on the Day of Atonement because that's the feast day that the writer of the book of Hebrews focuses in on as he is defining for us Christ's role as our high priest and the offering he made in the truly holy of holies, the tent which the Lord pitched, not man, in the heavenly realm. So last week I introduced the feasts, and you could say there's seven of them, plus the Sabbath day, which would be the what are called holy convocation, and that is how it's translated in New American Standard. And you can go check that Hebrew out if you want. But I'm going to put up here because it was requested that to help you guys kind of track what we're talking about as we go through this, those feasts that are mentioned. And Leviticus 23 is going to be the best location in the scripture, in the Old Testament in particular, where you'll get a definition of all the holy convocations, okay? A day of solemn rest or whatever you want to call it. And the Sabbath is one, and then it goes through, and it's going to actually lay them out in chronological order. All right, so first of all, I want to make sure I get the right month, so I'm going to refer to my little date calendar that I have. So when the Passover was instituted in Egypt, beginning in Exodus chapter 12, the Lord said this is going to be the first month. So from a sacred or festival or feast day perspective, that's how the calendar is set for those feasts and festivals. It becomes a sacred calendar, and it becomes the first month, all right? Because the actual year that began in the Israelite calendar, the month, what it was called, was actually Tishri. Okay? That was the first month in their calendar. All right, so, but it became the seventh month in the sacred. So I'm just going to, that's where three of our feasts, the last three feasts of the year, took place in this month. But I'm going to go and I'm going to write down now, I'm going to erase this, but I just wanted to give an example. Tishri is going to be actually the first month in their, quote, civil calendar. And they used the civil calendar for like, for official recording of like kings, things to do with kings. Childbirth, contracts, things of that nature. Okay? So, but let's get this, the feast days, and where they're laid out according to where they'd be in the calendar from a sacred sense. So the calendar is reset in a sacred sense with the month Nisan, or Nisan. Okay? And there are a couple of feasts or festivals or holy convocations according to Leviticus 23 that take place in this month. Right? And Exodus 12 is going to tell you that this is when the month was named and the date takes place. So the first festival that was created, or feast day that was created, that all the Israelites would be required to appear before God and not show up empty-handed, this is one of the big three, is the Passover. All right? So Nisan would be equivalent to, I'm going to say it's going to be like our March, April. Okay? So it'd be like a March, April. You notice it isn't going to be a nice, clean, it's month of March, month of April. Doesn't work that way for us. Okay? And on the 14th, so we'll go down like this, 14th was Passover. All righty? Then immediately following Passover, which ran from the 15th through the 22nd, would be the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And I'm just going to put unleavened, okay, for room purposes on our board. I hope I got that spelled right. I get it right? I mean, my writing, I've had two cups of coffee, which is one more than I usually have, and I'm shaky this morning. Some of you might think my teaching's shaky. But anyway, So that's Nisan, okay? So you'd have those two. Now, there was one other event that happened during this month. All right? Now, let's go to the book of Leviticus 23, and while Mr. Wilson is reading this, I'll write it down, and I'll come retrieve the mic back from you. Are you in Leviticus 23? Verse 10 and 11 and 12 and 13, I guess. So 10 through 13. If you would read that out, Leviticus 23, 10 through 13.
Leviticus 23, 10 through 13. Speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, when you enter the land which I am going to give to you and reap its harvest, then you shall bring in the sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest. And he shall wave the sheaf before the Lord for you to be accepted. On the day after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it. Now on the day when you wave the sheaf, you shall offer a male lamb 1 year old without defect for a burnt offering to the Lord. Its grain offering shall then be 2/10 of an ephah of fine flour mixed with oil, an offering by fire to the Lord for a soothing aroma, with its libation, 1/4 of a hin of wine.
I know this is going to be hard to read. I'm trying to make sure I got enough room. I'll probably take this down and put it out here where we can see it better. Now, I had this. Appreciate that. Okay, so you notice there that said on the first day after the Sabbath, of the first Sabbath, that would occur in the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Remember it.
I think you just shut the mic off.
I did. Okay, are we on? Are we on? Are we on? Okay. Okay, so Passover, 14th of Nisan. That was a day. So it could fall anywhere based on the calendar. All right, and remember, it's about every 6-7 years, 3 times in a 19-year period, because their months were alternating 30 and 29-day months under the Israelite calendar. About once every 6 years or so, 3 times in a 19-year period, they would add another month called Vader, V-E-A-D-E-R, to make up for the lunar cycle where they would fall behind the natural 365-day lunar that we have. They would fall behind, and so every 6 years they would throw that in there to catch up so that they would be on track with the lunar cycle, which is kind of what they use to gauge festivals and stuff to go forward on days and all that and months. So on the 14th of Nisan would be Passover. Immediately after Passover began the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And that first day of the feast was a holy convocation. It'd be treated like a Sabbath day. No work, okay? A day of rest. And the last day was a Sabbath day, treated like a Sabbath day. It didn't matter what day of the week it fell on, brethren. It was treated like a Sabbath day. No work. So when you read in John, where it talks about Jesus on the cross, they had to break his legs, get him to, you know, they went and broke his legs, or they were going to break his legs, forgive me. They broke the thieves' legs, they were going to break Jesus' legs, saw he was already dead, they got him down off the cross. When you read in John 19 there, it says that in speaking about getting him down off the cross, everything involved there, they had to get him down, it says, so that they could prepare for the Sabbath, and it says, for that was a high day. It's talking about the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. See? So, again, that would be a Sabbath upon its in and of itself, right? And it was a high day, meaning it's a high feast day, right? So then we see that Passover, high day, the Sabbath, okay, this feast day. And then we see Sabbath mentioned and the day after Sabbath mentioned in Jesus' resurrection from the tomb, right? You guys can go back and check that out and just reread it. And we'll get back to this later on. But I'm just kind of, and I'm paraphrasing a bunch of stuff and we're not reading and we could, but I'm trying to get through a bunch of things this morning and I'm going to have limited time. All right, so Passover, Feast of Unleavened Week, of Unleavened Bread, 1 week. But the day following the first Sabbath day's rest, normal seventh day, the day after that, the priest, according to Leviticus 23, and you can read it in other references in the Old Testament, would present the first sheaf of the first fruits, a wave offering. That's what Mr. Wilson just read. Are you all with me on that? Mr. Wilson?
I'm with you, but there's a lot to keep track of. So what you're saying is, whenever that 14th day was, let's say it was a Tuesday, then Wednesday would be a Sabbath. Then that Saturday would be the Sabbath, a regular Sabbath. And then the day after Saturday, so Sunday, would be the wave offering of the sheaf.
When the first fruit would be waved, lifted up and waved before the Lord, the first day of the week following that first Sabbath in the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Now a bunch of things should be...
Following the Saturday. I am
totally discombobulated. Okay, Mr. Schaefer.
And then just wanted to clarify on... So let's think in the same time frame. So let's take the 14th being an actual Passover day. So the 14th Passover, correct? And that, or the on the 14th day of the month, that would be a Passover. So is it 15th through the 22nd, or is it the 15th through the 21st?
7 days I could have my my math wrong.
21st then. Okay.
Is it Passover on the
14th? Yes, 21st.
Okay. Okay, thanks. So I just want to make sure I was following.
I'm going to go up and correct it. Okay. Everybody with me? Kind of. All right. All right, I'm going to change that. So I don't want to cause anybody to stumble over the wrong date here. So on Passover, you would have two holy convocations in a row. Passover, first day of Feast of Unleavened Bread. Okay? For sure. And depending on where that fell in the week, you might have three. Okay, so, but the first day after that regular Sabbath, I'm going to put up here. Then you'd have the offering of the sheaf, the wave offering of the sheaf, the first fruit. Now for me, your mind should be just absolutely going bang. Okay? But that's that. So there's three in Nisan that are mentioned there in Leviticus 23. Then you have seven Sabbaths counted off from the Sabbath of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And that would then be a 50-day period. You'd go seven Sabbaths. Seven times seven is 49. The day after that last Sabbath, which that again would be what day? The first day of the week. You would have what is called the Feast of Weeks. And I'll get you the month here in just a minute. That ain't working. For all you gals that ever wondered, are guys one trackers? Yes. You can see this. I'm not doing very well. But it would be typically the month of, I think it's Sivan, if I remember right. All right? And so down here would be the Feast of Weeks. Notice this was called First Fruit. Feast of Weeks, Feast of First Fruits. We know it as Pentecost, right? From the New Testament. Man, I write so well. Anyway, but it would typically fall in the month of Sivan, which is going to be about, oh, May, June. Typically would fall somewhere in there. Again, it depends on if you're on one of those months where you had that extra month and all that, okay? On a year where you're making up the lunar cycle. because they had a 354, basically, day calendar. Oh, got another hand going up. Whenever it's Mr. Wilson, it's telling me I am not being clear about something. Okay.
You're doing great. I know, I just was wondering, is Feast of Weeks, is it called Weeks because it's 7 weeks after?
Yes, yes. Any other questions on that? Okay. Just trying to lay out the feast for you guys where they're located in the month of the year. So that would be Sivan. Okay, so that's Feast of Week, Pentecost, and that's on first day. Gosh, this thing. Of week. And I didn't make that note up here, but the sheaf is waved on the first day of the week too. Now, if you're thinking of Jesus Christ, you've already figured out a whole bunch of stuff about this. All right? So, Nisan, Sivan, and then the seventh month in the sacred calendar, the actual first month, in the seventh month, yeah, we'll just, Tishri. Okay, and this is usually September, October, all right? Typically would correlate to our September, October, and by that, usually later September into the, you know, the middle, third week. Again, it's going to rotate, okay? Tishri, so we got 1, 2, 3, 4, and then here, you can read Leviticus 23, and let me see, let's go to... Mr. Dunbar, you're the closest. We want to get to about verse 20. Are you in the Rotherham?
Yeah.
About verse 23. I'm looking. 26. Well, 26 is the tabernacles, right? Yeah, I want before that. About 23. Look, 23. Does it talk about the trumpets? 23, 24. Okay, would you read 23, 24? And then, Mr. Schaefer, I'll come to you for the Day of Atonement.
Okay. And Yahweh spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the sons of Israel, saying, in the seventh month, on the first of the month, shall there be unto you a sacred rest, a trumpet-blowing commemoration, a holy convocation. A laborious work shall you do, but ye shall bring near an altar flame unto Yahweh.
Okay, so you would bring an offering, okay, but it was a day of rest, so you have your first day in Tishri is trumpets. And that's first day of the month. Is there still plans at some point to get a deal to post on the wall? Okay. I'm just asking.
Mr. Simpson, yes. I don't need to come here, but something didn't sound quite right or didn't come out right. That's a Sabbath. There's no laborious.
No laborious. I think he might have just missed reading no. So all of these, when it says it's a holy convocation, they are days of rest, no work. No work in the regular realm, okay? So your first day is the trumpets, and then... Mr. Schaefer, you had 26 for Day of Atonement. You want to read that?
Okay. Leviticus 23:26. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, on exactly the 10th day of this seventh month is the Day of Atonement. It shall be a holy convocation for you, and you shall humble your souls and present an offering by fire to the Lord. You shall not do any work on this same day, for it is a Day of Atonement to make atonement on your behalf before the Lord your God.
Okay. And then I want to see how far it's further. I want you to go. Yeah, let's read 29 through 32.
Okay. If there is any person who will not humble himself on the same day, he shall be cut off from his people. As for any person who does not work on this same day, that person I will destroy from among his people. Who does any work on this same day, that person I will destroy from among his people. Verse 31. You shall do no work at all. It is to be a perpetual statute throughout your generations in all your dwelling places. It is to be a Sabbath of complete rest to you, and you shall humble your souls on the ninth of the month at evening. From evening until evening, you shall keep your Sabbath.
Okay, so it helps you see how they dated and timed things too. You notice it says from evening to evening. So a Sabbath for a Jew, if they were celebrating a Sabbath, would fall from Friday night sundown, in our way of understanding, until Saturday night sundown. Okay? So this is on the 10th day, you got atonement. You notice here it says cut off if you do not humble your souls. Now, if I don't have enough time to go through everything this morning on that humble your souls, but when you look at that word in the Hebrew and you look it up in the Old Testament, you'll notice that that humbling your souls or afflicting your souls in some of the older translations is associated with fasting. So they've, all the guys that are the linguists and all those guys that have studied through this looked at it and said that when you're talking about humbling your soul in reference to a feast day, it's talking about fasting. This is the only prescribed day where you would fast under the law. Day of Atonement. But you were to humble your souls, and you were to fast. No work, and you fasted. So you can see that it's teaching in the instruction here, if you do any work, or if you don't fast, that's how solemn a day this was. It was the day in the mind of the Israelite. If you didn't do that, you broke the covenant. You were cut off from the covenant. Mr. Wilson, did you have your hand up?
Just one other thing in case, I know the way my mind's worked before, I'm not trying to get ahead of you, but in that John 19, that Sabbath was a high day. Like, you see holy convocation, no work, holy convocation, no work. But this passage you just had us read, it actually describes that and calls it a Sabbath of rest. So in case, Sabbath we usually think of a seventh, but it is basically what I'm saying is there's a scriptural precedent in the Old Testament to call those days, even if it wasn't Saturday, a Sabbath.
It would be considered a seventh or a rest day, yes. So again, and if you look at Passover, you'll see that if a person chooses not to participate in the Passover, and that's the one feast that God had a mulligan, that's a golf term for a do-over, and that's if you could not be present on the 14th of the month Nisan, you would show up in the second month, and you would then have the opportunity to observe the Passover on that month, on that day, and you would still be all right. If you did not show up on the 14th of Nisan to be a part of the Passover, or you didn't go through the Passover protocols, okay, which we're going to go into that a little bit more in detail. If you did not do that and there was no reason at all that you could not participate, you were cut off. No valid reason that you could not participate, you were cut off. Okay? So, do yourself a service here in the next week. Put the term cut off in your electronic concordance and check the passages in the Old Testament that talk about cut off. Particularly pay attention to the ones, obviously, in Exodus through Deuteronomy. All right? Pay attention to those. God took some things pretty seriously, and you would be cut off from the congregation. And again, last week I mentioned that word cut off is the same root, only in the negative form, of the root for cut, to cut. And in Genesis 9 and in Genesis 15, I mentioned that when God made a covenant first with Noah, he said, I'll cut a covenant with you. That's that term there. And then with Abram, I will cut a covenant with you. So if you are cut off, you're cut off from the covenant God cut with you. Did I lose you? So very serious business, right? So that's the sixth one. And then the one that followed shortly thereafter was booths, also called tabernacles. I'm going to try and get this down here. And ingathering. And that was on the 14th, I believe it began. And I will try and find that in Leviticus 23 here, and we'll finish reading that chapter. Okay, we did the Day of Atonement, which Mr. Schaefer read for us. 33, and the Lord spoke to Moses, Leviticus 23:33, and the Lord spoke to Moses saying, speak to the sons of Israel saying, oh, 15th. I've got Passover in my head. On the 15th of this month is the Feast of Booths. So you notice it's 15 to 21 again, only now in the month Sivan instead of Nisan. Saying on the 15th of this seventh month, okay, is the Feast of Booths for 7 days to the Lord. On the first day is a holy convocation. You shall do no laborious work of any kind. For 7 days you shall present an offering by fire to the Lord. On the 8th day you have a holy convocation and present an offering by fire to the Lord. It is an assembly or a gathering. You shall do no laborious work. And in verse 37, these are the appointed times of Yahweh which you shall proclaim as holy convocations to present offerings by fire to the Lord, burnt offerings and grain offerings, sacrifices and libations. Each day's matter on its own day, besides those of the Sabbaths of the Lord or of Yahweh, and besides your gifts, and besides all your votive and free will offerings which you give to Yahweh. Again, remember, gifts, votive offerings, those types of things. Free will offerings typically were associated with peace offerings. Okay? On exactly the 15th day of the seventh month, when you have gathered in the crops of the land, that's why it's called ingathering as well. Okay? Let me see here. Gathered in the crops of the land, and that would be more the fruit-based grape. Remember I told you grain and grape for Pentecost and tabernacles or feast of ingathering? In the crops of the land, you shall celebrate the feast of Yahweh for 7 days with a rest on the first day and a rest on the 8th day. Now, on the first day, you shall take for yourselves a foliage. I always say foliage. Drives my bride crazy. All right, the foliage of beautiful trees, palm branches and boughs of leafy trees and willows of the brook, and you shall rejoice before Yahweh your God for 7 days. You shall thus celebrate it as a feast of the Lord to Yahweh for 7 days in the year. It shall be a perpetual statute throughout your generations. You shall celebrate it in the seventh month. You shall live in booths for 7 days. All the native born in Israel shall live in booths, so that your generations may know that I had the sons of Israel live in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am Yahweh, your God. So Moses declared the sons of Israel the appointed times of Yahweh. Okay? So 14th through 21st again. Okay? There's your seven feasts besides a regular, quote-unquote, my terminology, Sabbath. So, Mr. Schaefer.
Just something that's occurred to me throughout this is that I'm noticing a pattern of the first day of the week. It's 50 days, it's on the 8th day, it's interesting. So I don't want to get any further than along that, but
I know you already know where I'm going.
But yeah, the first day of the week is, it's really popping up a lot if you do the math. You know, you have 7 weeks, right? It's 49 days, but on the 50th day, which would be first day of the week.
That was my hope. See, and I told you guys that we'll go through this more in depth each one. But I told you guys that there is a pattern in the feasts, in the festivals. By the way, there's seven of them, a complete understanding of God's holy convocations, okay? The holiness of God's convocations, completely communicated. Jesus Christ is present in every one of those. See, every one of them. And you'll see that his life, in particular, in reference to what he does in offering of himself and what he's going to do to bring in the nation, is represented in these, foreshadowed in these feasts. Now, most of you should already have this just jumping out of your head. See, so it's really cool when you study stuff in the Old Testament, because you can see, as Jared just pointed out, there was a pattern God was putting forth and drilling into the minds of the Israelites, because when Jesus came, he was going to fulfill them all, and it was going to be able to take the Israelite mind and point back and go, look at that. That is who he said he was. Just look at what happened on the days involved with our feasts. Okay? So, again, it's all designed to help us to understand who Jesus Christ is and who we are as his people. Now, I'm going to tell you, there just isn't many religious organizations out there that even bother with this stuff. Pentecost, maybe. Passover. But the rest of the stuff, they really, you know, they, they don't really dwell on or think about in reference to Christ. They just, you know, they don't teach it. I know they don't teach it because I talk to people that go to church, quote unquote. They have no clue about the Old Testament, period. Now, that could be because they're not there, not paying attention, let's be fair. But in most cases, I can tell you in the religious affiliation organization that I was raised in, they never talked about any of this stuff, ever. It was all grace, 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 so you can sin, 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 sin. And that's what it was about. That's all it was about. And all religious organizations, eventually, when they go bad, go that direction. Either from a grace perspective or a law perspective. Hey, pay this money and you can sin like crazy, and even your relatives that have sinned like crazy, you pay this money, we'll get them out of there. We'll get them into heaven. You know, I mean, there's all these things that come out, but you can see that that's what happens.
Have you ever had this discussion with a Seventh-day Adventist?
I have to some degree.
Because this to me would really help explain why they're wrong, I guess. But what was their response? I mean, obviously, I don't think they're here. So
they go back to that perpetual stuff.
Do they? Okay. I mean, the pattern seems to be so clear that, well, okay, it's not. It's complex, but it's clear once you see all the parts together. And I just was curious if it was convincing. So,
to an open mind, honest mind, sure. Mr. Hahn.
Where do you find information on the months of Nisan and Sivan and Tishri?
It's in the Old Testament, but are you talking about where would you get the calendar?
Well, where would you just find the calendar?
Well, usually in any good Bible that's there, you'd have to go back and look at some of the Israelite writings where they have dates and stuff on months, and that's where you get their calendar from. Yeah, I've got a little copy up there if you want it. It gives you all the months.
You can pull it up online as well. Just type in religious calendar.
I've never done that, but I just always have had them in a couple of my study Bibles, and I've always just referred. Mr. Taylor, you've got to get your hand up high. You can't do the side wave. Come on.
I know the other organization that you're talking about, I remember as a boy having to dress the priest and the rituals. I remember the Stations of the Cross, and I remember there was a big argument about Passover and Easter back in the day about who had the right date or whatever. But then that generally made an argument for against the Jews, and we want to be inclusive, so they had to figure out where the day was going. But other than that, the parallel there with being cut off in Hebrews 10 there, I don't know if you're getting there or not, but... Yeah, I'll just be quiet then.
No, go ahead.
Oh, the Hebrews 10 there is just as severe because of the time that people wanted to keep practicing what had been old, and this was the new way to do things. And so they were being sternly warned about substituting the old for the new.
And again, particularly the two that get you cut off is Passover, which that was the blood of the covenant, wasn't it? And Hebrews, what you're talking about, Hebrews 10, talks about the blood of the covenant.
Question way back here. Were all the first days that pop up here, were they all holy convocations?
Yes, yes, all of them. On the, where it calls the first day shall be a Sabbath rest, yes, it's a holy convocation. That necessarily is not a Saturday again. It could be any day of the week based on where this fell on the ones that are calendar driven, like Passover, Trumpets,
the days after.
Yes, or the day itself. Like the first, whatever day of the month the first of Tishri was, that was a holy convocation. If it fell on a Sabbath day, okay. Now remember, this, they're rotating because they don't have a 365-day calendar like we observe. It's 354. And so they had to add that month about every 6 years, three times in 19 years. I know that for a fact. And it was called Vader. Not Darth, okay? V-E-A-D-E-R.
Just big picture-wise, I was thinking it's interesting. After they came out of Egypt was the new calendar. It should make us think about, yeah, God makes all things.
That's good. I was going to point that out in Passover, but that's really good. Yeah, and I'll point that out. That's one of my points, and if...
Jennifer's looking at my notes on Passover. She knows I've already got something like that in there where you reset the calendar. So that's a great point. Any other comments, or Mr. Schaefer?
I just really have to thank Mark for pointing out the Hebrews 10 passage, because really it does start to connect and make a lot more sense in the New Testament sense, not only the blood of the covenant, but I think verse 25 about not forsaking your own assembly together. He's really driving the point home. Guys, listen, get rid of the old. It's time to hit the new. And what, how we, the convocation, so to speak, today would be being an assembly. And he drives it home. And I think, you know, anybody that was a Hebrew that knew all this stuff and was trying to keep track of all of it, and he says, he lines all this up, and then he says, don't forsake your assembling together. They're going to get the point that they're not going to have life if they don't assemble.
And I don't know if you noticed, but I did read purposely through the last section there, talking about the Feast of Booths, Tabernacles, and Ingathering, where it says, it is an assembly. So, okay. That's why, and you know, you guys, you're smart. Some of you have been well taught. Luke. Good old Luke. Anyway, you're figuring this out, brother. And again, you have to understand, you know, we're looking at it going, well, duh, you know. But the Israelites had to have this pattern, and then when the church is teaching this stuff, the leadership in the church, from the apostles and the prophets unto those whom, you know, trust these things, the faithful men who will then in turn be able to teach others also. You know, the whole thing that we're trying to convince you men in particular in this congregation of your responsibility to your wife if you're married in particular, okay? Or if you're going to be married. It's your role. You're supposed to be able to explain this stuff. Your wife should not be approaching me or Luke. It's okay if she does. But she should not be approaching us. You shouldn't be saying, well, I don't know. Go ask Luke or Kevin. Or specifically, if it's an Old Testament question, don't say, go ask Kevin. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to say to your wife, go back, have your husband study it out, and he'll give you the answer. Then he can come and ask me if he's got it right if he wants. And I'll just tell him the same thing. Go study and say, Brad, you got a comment? Just a minute. We'll get it. I just want to make sure your hand was up to get a comment. I couldn't tell if you were. Okay.
And Mike's Mike bought this on, and he's wondering, so am I, kind of how did they do this? I mean, well, the sacrifices and stuff and the blood and everything. I mean, what happened with all of this? And how did they carry this out? I mean, there's what, a million people maybe or something like that, you know? How did they do that all in this amount of time? You know?
I think that's a great question. And I think if you look at the practices of the nation, here's what I'm going to tell you. It's apparent to me that not everybody was doing this within the nation of Israel. Just look at how many years went by until Hezekiah reinstituted Passover and all that. How many years they hadn't been doing it. And then you'll read, since. So there's a whole lot of people not participating in it. God made it known, but did people participate? Nope. Mr. Taylor.
I just want to key off your comment about wives or women and men. And this might sound weird, but some days, you know, if you're a guy, you say, well, it'd be easier to be a woman, or let the woman do the deciding. And I'm thankful for my wife that she forces me to make decisions sometimes that, you know, feel like that Dumbo movie, the two crows. I don't know, what do you think? And it's kind of that back and forth. And that's really, God's pushing us a little bit. I mean, even from the very beginning when Adam blamed Eve about all of that, because I think really men know, you know, that on decision-making process and the reasoning. So, this way.
I like the comment. All righty. So I just want to get through these, and okay, Mr. Schaefer.
Just one big picture comment, I think, too. Two things. One, I am super thankful I don't have to remember this stuff every year. You know what I mean? I really am, that I don't have to try to remember, okay, this is the seventh month, it's the 48th. I'm so glad. And the other thing is that, to me, a lot of these sacrifices for the Old Testament person, they would remind them of something that had happened. For us, it's a reminder of something that had happened. It's a reminder of something past. Whereas moving into the New Testament period, the things that we do now, they're all about looking forward. They're all about completing and doing it today. Not just remembering what somebody did for us a long time ago, but moving forward, which again ties very well, I think, into the Lord's Supper, because it is something to remind us of what has been done, but it motivates us to move forward.
Yeah, there is the forward looking in as well. Yeah, when he shall return, right?
So, again, those are the feasts, brethren. And then as far as, you know, and I think Brad, Mike's question is a good one. How did they pull off all of these offerings? Well, by certain times in the Old Testament, there'd been enough of the generation of Moses reproducing, or Moses, Jiminy, of Aaron reproducing, that there were more and more priests so they could pull it off, particularly by the time of Jesus' arrival on the scene. You know, in what we call New Testament days, they were fairly faithful because the idolatry has been driven out of them. So they have huge crowds going to the temple. But again, you look at the Old Testament. I'm just going to tell you, read that history. You'll see for many, many, many years, they did not even practice this stuff.
Yeah, that's kind of, I don't know, this is my take on it. They had the priests who were very knowledgeable in the minutiae of the law. And God didn't put together a law that couldn't be kept. He put together a law that would show our weakness. And, you know, the average Israelite didn't probably know these details and kind of just went through it kind of in a rote motions or and didn't really think about it. And that's why it didn't really work for them. They really weren't thinking. And again, it wasn't that God wanted to show our weakness, because only through our weakness could then Jesus Christ come and help us to fulfill the law and go past it. At least that's kind of how I look at it. Because I can't, I mean, I very much appreciate your layout on the whiteboard, but it just overwhelms you so quickly.
There's a lot. I agree. And again, the priests were derelict in their duties too, and that's throughout the Old Testament. They were supposed to teach the people, and there are times they did a very, very, very poor job.
And that, again, great point, Larry, and I think to add on to that, they did not benefit in the way that they were supposed to from the all of this if they did it by rote. You think we benefit if we do what we do today because we try to do it by rote? Don't think so.
Principle is the principle. That's how I'll say that. Okay, so Day of Atonement, three times in. All right, plain clothing, come out. After he comes out, he offers the burnt offerings, which is evidence of the covenant being renewed, along with the, what remained of the sin offering that had to be burned on the altar. But he would change clothes, and I made this point last week, and I just want to close on this. Go in with nothing but the white sash, white tunic, white undergarments, the white turban, but it had on the turban, the blue cord, and the plate that said holy to the Lord, that still he wore. And then when he came out, it says he would wash when he was done and then put on his clothes. And that's where I believe, and it doesn't say this, but I believe that the high priest would then put on all that garb that he normally wore that was for glory and for beauty. See? So he's back into this glorious, you know, picture. All these great colors and all this communication. And that's what he was wearing. So when he came out, all right, he left all the garments that had to do with sin and salvation and atonement in there. And when he came out, he's not wearing that. He's now wearing his high priestly garb in all its glory and all its beauty. Okay, so we'll stop there this week. Pick it up next week, talk a little bit more about Day of Atonement and go on into the feast days. Thanks for your attention, guys, and all the great comments.